Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, your Bengals beat writers for Cincinnati.com and the Cincinnati Inquirer, once again, spread across the globe. Here we go again.
Yeah, man.
This time, I'm in Houston. You're back home. So here we are doing the internet record again.
Hey, it's like it's a game of podcasting / digital football. You know, I kind of had to bob and weave and you know, prevent Marvin Lewis from, you know, cutting my legs off. And now I threw it to you, and now you're trying to catch Matt Langle. You know, I mean, it's...
Which just like it was in training camp, not too hard to do. I was able to. I was. Matt Langle, when there's 8 million media at Media Day, the one thing is, I didn't have too hard of a time sifting through the masses that were surrounding Matt Langle. Although you want to know, you want to know how crazy opening night now media day debacle is. I went to go find Matt Langle right when the Pats like 60 minutes started. For those that don't know, I mean it's inside freaking Minute Maid Stadium. I mean it's right inside Astros ballpark, and so the whole field is open basically for players to scatter everywhere, and then there's 11 of them on podium including Belichick, and so these players just scatter into crowds and people are walking up to him trying to talk to him. So I figured I walked up to find Matt Langle, spotted him. There were already two people talking to Matt Langle. How is this possible?
Yeah,
I don't understand how it's. I mean, it's amazing to me. I mean, you can't get more obscure than that dude.
Was it the guy in the giant red cowboy hat?
No, but I do like that guy.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, that when I spotted the giant red cowboy hat and the Houston, Texas full suit talking to Cinderella and the Prince, who were actually dudes dressed up like Cinderella and the Prince, I decided that it's too much. I can't handle this stuff. And the funny thing is, you know, the stuff that we actually were sent here to try to do, you know, talk to players or coaches, it's the one time during the week you can't really do that.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people and so many people doing dumb things. A guy walking around with a giant hand. I mean, like a hand the size of my entire upper body.
Right.
Holding in the air, or J.B. Smoove doing his comedy act, or any number of, I mean, just crazy people that are just trying to, I don't know. Do I sound frustrated by this?
You've only been there like 12 hours.
I just got here. That's right. It's just great. The Super Bowl is just insane. But anyway, so that's why I'm in Houston. I'll be here all week. I did have a chance amongst the madness to finally work my way through the front and have a conversation with Mohamed Sanu. So keep an eye out for that story. I'll have something on that. I will have my story on Matt Langle, who actually was great. I'm going to bring you some of the interview later. People might not remember the kid from EKU who was on the Bengals practice squad, got plucked by the Pats midseason, and here he is in the Super Bowl. That dude cannot believe he is there. It's hysterical. Anyway, so him and all some other stuff on thoughts on Andy Dalton and Matt Ryan and these two offenses, and that's going to be coming up later in the week. So keep an eye on that for Super Bowl coverage. And so anyway, that's me. But last week you were in Mobile. We talked to you last podcast. You were down there, but a lot happened after we chatted.
Yes. Yeah, it was, just to kind of give people a little lay of the land, whereas yours, you're dealing with chaos. It's relatively controlled, meaning you're in a giant baseball stadium, as controlled as that could be. Mobile is a little different in the sense, just to give people a little insight here. It's a football stadium, Ladd Peebles, but it's not run by the NFL, which is a good thing. But what makes that challenging is everyone is spread everywhere. Now, coaches are usually wearing their team gear, unless you're a certain kind of coach who your face is your credential, so to speak. Yes. And there's bleachers on both sides. There's end zone bleachers. There's tunnels. There's a press box that we're not allowed into. So really, for folks, it's just trying to find people. And so that's why when we did this a week ago, we didn't have any audio or I hadn't talked to anybody yet. So after that, you're right, found Bengals head coach Marvin Lewis. He was a little irritated to be sitting there. I mean, I know Bengals fans kind of shrugged their shoulders at Marvin, but he definitely reiterated the fact that he'd rather be preparing for a game this week. As opposed to being at the Senior Bowl. He kind of did his usual dance, Paul. He put it out there that he wants to get an extension done, as has been the annual thing the last handful of years. Yep. I think we wondered about that, right? He didn't make Absolutely. Mention of it prior before, and he kind of put it out there, hey, we'd like to get something done. Everyone would be comfortable.
Hasn't said that, though. That's the right thing. I mean, in past years, when he was getting them every year, he wasn't saying, I want to get one. It would just sort of happen whenever something happened in the media about him being on the hot seat to piss him right. off or something like that. I mean, it would just sort of happen whenever because he was sick of hearing or dealing with it. But this year, when in the end of the year press conference, he said, oh, okay, I don't really care. I could do it either way, knowing there's a chance. I think we all thought, okay, maybe this will be the year that he will go in without a contract. So for him to actually say it, much less be this year, I thought that was kind of a big news nugget.
Yeah, it was. And it was funny, Paul, because, he had been so – granted, he took issue with Chris Cooley's report, whatever that was, at the end of the season. But I thought – and I don't know if you got the read on it – I thought he played – his future fairly casually at the end of the year when he was asked those questions. Just, I'm back. I'm not retiring. So I sort of asked it in a casual manner. And you'll hear this audio here where it's just, hey, how do you feel? Do you want to be back? And he just sort of put it out there that he wants to be back. And I think that, the fact that he wants to coach again reinforces what he had been saying, that he wasn't ready to retire, and the fact that he wants to go beyond 2017 puts it out there that he's, whatever that retirement talk or hints we may have thought were there, well, he still at least feels he's got 2 years left, right?
Yeah, well, I kind of saw it as him not being afraid to go year to year because maybe he'd right. want, I'm just sort of I'm just sort of surprised that he would put it out there at all, and I think that shows his want to get the narrative out there that he was okay with going. Obviously, he wanted that out there that he was not okay with going into next year's lame duck, which right. would make it even more interesting if this does not get done. I tend to be of the belief that if Marvin wants it to get done, it will. But it again will be interesting when Marvin and Mike go to, as Mike likes to say, do our little dance. if they do come out the other side with a deal, if they don't, then you would you know, and I feel like we've had this conversation every year. If they don't, then you would get the sense that, okay, maybe things are ratcheting up. But that's big by Marvin to put it out there, because if it doesn't get done, it does expose him for it being apparent that it would be Mike that has decided to put the coal, you know, the feet to the coals of the fire, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's it is an interesting point. I mean, clearly that, you know, they meet after the year, as both parties always say they do. So clearly they haven't come to any sort of agreement yet on that topic. So it's January. I mean, usually, you know, a 1 year extension is announced in April, right around the schedule release, or I think it last year might have been a little bit beforehand because of some national reports that kind of forced them to at least release that at that point. So, you know, there's some time left, but you're right, Paul. Obviously, maybe Marvin was hearing some stuff that to this point he didn't quite like to at least put it out there. And look, Marvin, say what people want. Marvin's a smart guy. And he says what he wants to when he wants to. He knows. It's just like when he went to Doc before that last Cleveland game and said he didn't have a single dominant player on defense. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, there's a reason he says and does some of the things he does. And I think this is definitely falls in that category of, hey, you know, Mike and ownership, you know, let's get something done for 2018.
Yeah. So that's where that was. Let's bring in some of that conversation you had, and also another portion of it where the conversation turned to sort of Jeremy Hill and some of the injured players, just to give you a little insight to that convo. So here's some of your interview with Marvin Lewis from the beautiful bleachers of Ladd Peebles Stadium in Mobile, Alabama.
With how do you, again, kind of breaking it down, how did you see Jeremy's year play out? I know last year, or 2015, wasn't what he had wanted as it coming off that rookie campaign. And I know it's running game is all parts together. But I know he was talking to him after the season. I know he was disappointed. He felt he didn't break enough tackles or make enough big plays for you.
Jeremy was probably more injured than Jeremy ever let on. And that probably not only he played through it because we needed him to, because Gio was a little banged up, Rex was hurt, and so Jeremy kept playing. And you know, but at the end of the day, maybe some habits developed that we had to try to break him back out of as the season went on. And then that's the unfortunate part, you know. I think we had some guys who really sucked it up for the team and continued to play with injuries where maybe, you know, I should have maybe set them down. And maybe we would have come out of the other end of it better off, better served. But, you know, what happens is, unfortunately for us this year, when we had injuries, we had them all in one position.
Right.
And so we didn't have that luxury where you just have one guy down and you plug the next guy in and go forward. We had two guys, you know, not quite 100%, and then it makes it harder to, so you're trying to pull everybody through it.
Right. Do you still see, do you see, you know, that guy in him still, that who we saw in 2014?
Yeah. I do. I mean, I don't think anything changes, and you know, but again, it's his approach and everything he does and so forth. You know, his 2015 season got marred for the fumbles, and then the 2016 season, you gotta just, you know, it was what it was. And now it's all part of your history, but now you get a chance to change it and make it part of your future.
Would you like to get something done again in April? It seems that's usually the time that we hear that extensions have been handed out. Is that something you...
Well, yeah, we'd like to agree to something at some point. And, you know, it puts, I think, everybody's mind at ease going forward for their futures. So a lot of the people in the building makes it easier on them.
Okay, so there's that, and kind of as on the back end, interesting the conversation of maybe more guys were hurt than we realized.
Yeah, and it's funny, Paul, because when Marvin at the end of the year put it on himself in terms of I need to pull more out of players or I need to get more or whatever, the natural question was, well, how are these guys going to be different? How are they going to improve? Well, in order to do that, they sort of have to admit some fault, right? They have to admit something they didn't do right in 2016 that they can do better. And I think he, in order to defend Jeremy a little bit, and we knew Jeremy was nicked up, starting with that Miami game where he hurt his shoulder, almost on the same play, I think Clint Bowling got hurt, and a knee later, right, if I remember correctly. He sort of, as you heard there, kind of drifted into, well, maybe I should have sat other guys down and we would have been better at the other end of it. And that's interesting because you remember, Paul, I remember in a press conference, I flat out asked, now that they're out, are you going to sit players who are hurt? And he's like, we don't have that problem. And then Tyler Eifert's have surgery and Bowling's having surgery. That's interesting to me that he would sort of publicly admit that and maybe say, hey, maybe I didn't do this the right way. Because, look, guys are always hurt. Guys are playing hurt all the time. That maybe transitions into this next thing, Paul, of playing younger players. Why didn't you set a hurt player down? Did you not trust the guys coming up behind? And that's always a constant thing with Marvin and this coaching staff. But I don't know. That's interesting to me.
Yeah. You know what? So yesterday, I was able to get over to the Thomas Dimitroff gaggle, the GM of the Falcons. And he said a really interesting thing. I'm going to have this in a column next week on some of my sort of observations of the week. He said he thought one of the biggest differences in his team this year ascending was Dan Quinn's willingness to play so many young players during the course of this season and not wait until 6-10 weeks in and essentially have a lost rookie season for some of these guys. The Falcons have a lot of rookies on their defense, and they played a lot of them and took a lot of bumps and bruises. And Dimitroff's point was there's hard knocks in that. I mean, there is a lot of tough, teachable moments that you have to get through, but coming out on the other end makes it worth it. And part of his point was the offense was able to carry him through a lot of that because of how developed the offense was, but the defense had to come along, and Quinn gave those young guys the chance to go out there, learn on the job, because by the end of the season, it had paid off, and now their defense has really come together for this run. I mean, we know that there is few franchises in the league less willing to play players in their rookie year than the Bengals, and that show there was also Football Outsiders put out a list of total snaps for rookies this year, and three of the bottom five were Washington, Minnesota, and Cincinnati.
There's a common denominator there.
Of course, number one by about 1,000 snaps was Hugh, but he doesn't count because he only had rookies on his roster.
So right.
But there's definitely a philosophy to that. But I just thought Dimitroff's point against that, I think, there's no doubt about it. You've got to give some of these guys more of a chance to play. And who knows what would have happened if Andrew Billings and William Jackson III. But they're going to have to learn where their philosophy stands next year, because there's going to be a lot of young guys.
Right. Yeah, it's I'm really curious to see how this plays out, because in a separate part of the conversation with Marvin, Paul, I thought was interesting was him saying, yeah, Tyler Boyd, we kind of said from day one he was going to have to start. So, what he thought was the light clicked on for Tyler against Pittsburgh in week 3, in terms of getting it and understanding, okay, so what Marvin thought going forward was, well, if he was week 3, we need that light to click in week 1, or if it's week 10, it's maybe Dimitroff's point, we need it to click in week 4. you know, he's like, we need to get, if young guys are going to play, we need it to happen faster. So again, there's some interesting, like, you know, so Marvin's sort of admitting some faults there with what happened this past season, and things they need to do. It was sort of along the vein of him ending the year saying we need to pull more out of guys, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's some veteran stuff. You know, he called out, you know, AJ Green and Geno Atkins being more vocal, whatever that means. And so maybe that's what that means for those guys. And then in the conversation, for instance, he said with Vontaze Burfict, look, Vontaze, there were a stretch of games he played well, but he's got to do it every day. You know, he can't just be great for a couple games. So he's sort of it. But to that young guy point, you know, it's interesting, Paul. I'm curious to see if there's a change there, and this draft might present it. I mean, as of now, they're going to get, what, 11 draft picks?
Yeah.
Can they roster all of them? Marvin even said, he's like, that's a lot.
Maybe more, depending on what happens with McCarron, or maybe less if they do decide to combine and trade and move, which was another one of the interesting things that I thought came out of your time in Mobile, which was when you talked to Duke Tobin. And, you know, you can shed more light on this conversation, but I thought your chat with Duke, when he sort of – Marvin said he doesn't know if this roster can handle 11, and Duke sort of brought up the idea of combining and moving up when you have all those picks, particularly now when you can trade those comp picks. I mean, you know, that's something that we've discussed multiple times on this podcast, and that'll be a huge topic leading up to draft weekend and all the way in April. But, you know, that is something that I think this team in multiple areas of its holy trinity of leadership in the front office has kind of hinted at. And I think that might make you believe that maybe they will be a little more active on draft day to try to turn this into the ideal draft to fit their 53-man roster. An 11-pick draft doesn't fit their 53-man roster.
Right.
But a more quality 9 or 8 would.
Right, right. Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, personnel guy speak in that sort of Q&A with Duke, and you really had to kind of parse through some of that. And you're right. But for him to just put out there, hey, we got 11, and maybe moving up. Look, again, these are very smart guys. They don't do things or have faux pas, if you will. Not in my opinion, not in my history. I mean, obviously you've been around the team a little longer with these guys, but in what now, 3 years, I don't recall them ever going like, whoops, you know, like, so for them to put that out there, I think is, you know, interesting. I think it clearly proves that they listened to us and your tweet saying that we should be hired as general managers or at least be consultants. This only reinforces that, you know. But again, you know, I like to pat ourselves on the back. So again, if you're a BBP listener, these are things we talked about a few weeks ago that now you're hearing from the Bengals front office as possibilities or at least things they will discuss. And, you know, Duke Tobin said, look, number 9 overall, you're not getting AJ Green. You're not getting a super rare player. You're getting the first pick or one of the first picks at, like, the rest of the really good guys. So if they're looking for a contributor and maybe a really good player, the idea of maybe moving up from 41 into the 30s or even, you know, when they drafted Russell Bodine the last time they traded up, as we talked about, hey, look, here's a guy who started for 4 straight years now. That's out there, and it might add some intrigue and maybe get them, you know, that younger player like a Tyler Boyd that they think can play right away and, as Marvin says, pull something out of much quicker.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think that second round or more probably that third, moving up from the third up to the second, where you get a guy that falls that they didn't expect to be there at the bottom of the second, getting a second round pick, probably is more likely. I mean, moving up in the first isn't something that's going to happen. I don't think. But again, that's a long way off. Oh, by the way, on something you said earlier, There's definitely been some oops moments with Marvin Lewis.
Well, yeah.
So we're not including him in that.
No. I'm not talking about, you know, those things. I guess it more of the contract stuff, or even putting it out there that they're interested in moving somewhere or doing some. That I guess. No, you're right.
Yeah,
Marvin has had his share of gaffes. Yes.
Known to have the occasional gaffe. So that's kind of a portion of where you're at there. Another thing that I want to get into from the Mobile trip, which was sitting down with Ken Zampezi. He has been maligned.
Yeah.
Is that a good word?
Yeah. Yep.
And rightfully so. I mean, the numbers didn't bear out what they needed to, and he's taken a lot of heat for that. And there was even some thought that maybe he might not be back, but obviously is. And so this was the first time we've really seen him kind of sit down at length, and he's very – in season in particular, he was very short. He wasn't really into talking a lot with the media during the year, which changed for us from what Jay Gruden and Hugh Jackson were, but his right to be that way. But he was a lot more open, talking with you about a number of things. I'll let you sort of start first with some of your main takeaways from that conversation, then we'll bring a lot of it in.
Yeah. So first of all, for our listeners, just we were sitting off site. So unlike Marvin in the bleachers, where you hear some sort of background chatter, Ken and I were in a coffee shop, and so you hear that sort of background noise. But it's funny, Paul, because he said, in terms of what your lead in there, he kind of admitted that this season was a little different for him as a coordinator in dealing with the media, and sort of being a I don't want to say a personality, but frankly that's what Hugh and Jay were. So so he's like, he's like in season, that's not really me. So he said this conversation is me. And I think if loyal BBP listeners know from the little bits of audio we played this year, Ken, or maybe the little bit you heard elsewhere, he sounds different here. He sounds a little more relaxed, a little more open. It starts with didn't score enough, didn't win enough. But he drew a lot of positives out of himself. And you could, that's his right too. Obviously there's things they need to work on. But I would say that's – he used the word bones a lot. He said like the bones of the offense are good. He pointed to certain flashes of success, a top 10 total offense for a certain point. When Tyler Eifert was healthy, they scored 77% time in the red zone. But he didn't, of course, lean on that those as excuses. So it's kind of some coach speak, but I think a little more personality and a little more, and definitely more words from Ken Zampezi about his offense, how he felt it went. And then except at the end here, Paul, where when I asked him why they didn't score in the fourth quarter or why they didn't score in the second halves of games, that's still under review. So up until that point, can open up a little bit.
I mean, when they say under review, that's a multi-pronged question that I am sure that is, and it should be eating them up over the entire offseason trying to figure out what happened there. So, all right, let's just get into that interview. So here's your interview with us. Ken Zampezi. What coffee shop was it? Do you want to plug?
I'll plug the Panera in Mobile. And look, it's not a Panera. Look, people know. Look, they got pastries there, man. They got blueberry muffins. They got the things I like. And frankly, it's Mobile, Alabama, so all your options are really just chains.
Yes.
Like, they were really excited, Paul.
Panera's not bad. Panera's not bad for Mobile.
No,
for Mobile, that's a big win. That's the way to go. Yeah. So just you had a coffee and a pastry.
Yeah, multiple pastries.
What was you got to set the scene? Was it an arugula salad?
Black hazelnut coffee for Ken and a bagel. Whereas I had also a hazelnut, but I used a little cream, no sugar, and blueberry muffin. And then I did have a nice turkey sandwich with some cranberry and stuff after the fact. Ken left after that, but you know I had to have lunch then.
All right. Well, I'm sad that your turkey sandwich afterwards didn't make it into the story.
No, yeah.
I would have liked to get in that, set that scene. All right. Here's the Panera powwow with Jim and Ken.
As a team, we don't win enough. As an offense, we don't score enough. After that, the rest of the stuff is minor.
Okay.
Those two things have to happen. Now, the other things contribute to those two things being better. So we're into that phase.
Okay.
Things we can't fix the wins now. We can't fix the points now. But we can fix and come to conclusions on who, what to do with them, how much, how to coach them in those techniques, and all those things get investigated right now as we look back on what we did, why we did it against those teams. Was that the right thing? What will we do different next time? And then as you study other teams that were successful this year in those situations, what can we grab from them on how they did their techniques or who they did what plays against and why? And shoot, I've got tabs on my Excel on do this against this team. As I'm watching film, oh shoot, oh yeah, I got to make sure I don't forget that for Pittsburgh.
Right.
You know, or whoever, boom, 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 and I file ideas in as I watch them, as they come up, so I don't miss, I don't, there's so many thoughts that go through your head, and some, and not all of them are worthy of writing down, but the ones that are, I can't let slip through, you know, so I love this time of year, because you can just watch other teams do similar things that you did, and say, oh, why did they do it that way, you know, and that's a possibility. We got this guy. We can put him here. And you're just working through who and where and how to get the ball to the guys that need to touch it to win. And then my thoughts go to, okay, if they're not there, how are we going to get this done? Because we fell into that for quite a few years.
Right. You know, and I know throughout the year we'd ask you about red zone issues or wherever it may be, as you kind of step back, how I know it's frustrating, but I know that's an area that you're very good in. I mean, your former coordinators have said as much, that they'd bring in the room for that stuff. I don't know, now that it's I know it's frustrating in the moment, but now that you've been able to separate a little bit, are you more upset about it, or is it more, I don't want to say baffling, but is it, you kind of just, like, I need to watch it again, because I just don't know what happened. Like, how do you kind of look at those, at that part of, I guess, the offense this year? Because I know even when Tyler came back, that percentage really spiked in terms of conversion rates and things. But, I mean, how did you kind of look at that
I don't take into account who's out there, because it doesn't matter. You play with what you got, and that's fine. That's how it is. But our consistency, even just completing the balls, was not as high as it needs to be to give yourself a chance at conversions. And then some of the third downs and things like that. It just, we're better and we didn't play up to it. So that's a coaching deal. So I think part of it goes back to, okay, this is figuring out what you want to be, what you're going to be, and trying to stay to that so there's a confidence level. And then as you go through the year, not everything matches the team you're about to play. So now you're off into some other things that you add. When you add them, make sure they're thoroughly coached and why and the looks and things like that.
How and you started this by saying we didn't win enough and didn't score enough points. But I mean, I think until some of the injuries kind of maybe caught up at the end, but it was a top 10 offense for the bulk of the season. What's the balance there where you obviously see a lot working in various ways, but then as it is bottom line. So what's kind of as you look at it and trying to look forward, is it, how do you, I guess, take that, I guess? Is it just, okay, these are things we did well, so let's improve upon it or polish it up going forward? Or is it all just, we didn't win enough, we didn't score, so everything's under review? How did you kind of look at your offense in the first year?
Always under review. Okay. Win and don't win. Always. The film will reinforce whether you know, if you still feel positive, the film will reinforce that. Hey, these were good. Don't mess with that. And I do think the bones of it, good. There were games where we had kind of stranglehold on some teams where it should have finished 38 or 40 points and finished 20-something. Miami. Kicked a lot of field goals in Miami. But we're down there all the time. Some of those Cleveland games, those should have been, you know, other, and those things, I mean, the key is scoring points when you need to score points. And there were plenty of games at the end where we didn't score points at the end of the game. But we're third in scoring points in the first quarter in the NFL. So there's something there that's positive. We just need to get it out of our guys at the end.
Right. You know,
if we come out of the house of fire right there, kind of get these leads or get going in the game, and then, you know, we end up sputtering.
Yeah. Do you still have is the why for that still under review, or do you have some ideas now as to why you saw sort of that in terms of start faster and finish slower, or, you know, not capitalizing in the fourth quarters of games or second halves?
We're still looking at it.
All right, so there is a conversation with Ken Zampezi. Other news nuggets that have been bouncing around that we can get into. Randy Bullock is back.
See, you didn't believe me, man. I was like, Andy's coming back. And you're like, no, how can he come back? It was just,
how could you miss that kick in Houston?
Did it?
And so now, and there's more of the splaining of, oh, well, you know, it wasn't all Randy's fault.
Right.
He didn't know the time. Okay, fine. He's going to be a part of the competition. You know where I stand. We know where we've talked about it. We've written about it. It's time to go nip that in the bud and get a real free agent. If they're going to get Randy Bullock and some rookie, you're going to come into next year still feeling frustrated.
Yeah.
And maybe it ends up fine, but Randy Bullock has a history of not hitting clutch kicks, and that's important in his business.
Is it?
And I just, you know, that's an issue. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. And I actually, Darren Simmons, the first coordinator I was able to catch down there, said the exact same thing. I mean, he did enough to come back, but, you know, he wants to look at everybody, whether it's the kickers coming out of school or, even the free agent look. So when your special teams coordinator isn't entirely sold on the guy, I think to me that means they got to bring in someone else. Although it's interesting because they re-signed this John Brown kid from last year, and even Darren said, he's like, we can't have three kickers. He said three is too many. So I think we're gonna see John Brown in like the rookie camps and early on, and if he can't make anything or isn't any good, it's a weird. That's going to be an interesting thing to watch. Randy Bullock just might end up being the guy. I don't know. It'll be, Drake Kirkpatrick's going to have to learn his name.
Yeah, right. You know, the guy who kicked the ball. Right. The guy who kicked the ball. Adam Jones update. You had a little bit of scoopage on that from down there, and the Bengals sort of basically saying, we haven't made a decision yet on that. So there's They have not made their call. They haven't said he's coming back. They haven't said he's going to go. But for right now, where they're at with it is they're sort of I guess you'd say they're in waiting mode.
Yeah, Paul. I think they're struggling with this one. You know, I think and these videos aren't certainly going to help Adam's case in their eyes. In the public eye. Not in the legal sense, but that'll be interesting. They don't have to do anything. You know, you've broken down the numbers quite a bit with pre-June 1, post-June 1,
yeah.
You know, but the free agency begins in March. So that'll be kind of the first end of April, March, April, whatever, you know, February, end of this month. What month are we in?
Or perhaps, where are we? You know, and another thing that I think – that I really do think that you need to take into consideration from a Bengals perspective with this Adam Jones thing is they are holding on to him till they see if they can sign Drake Kirkpatrick.
Could be, yeah.
Drake Kirkpatrick's going to hit the market. Imagine if you cut Adam Jones today. And this show, you talked about it last week, how much of this is football. It's just football. You're willing to take maybe a little bit of the social hits and maybe – swallow a bit of your pride with Adam Jones because you need the guy more than ever, right?
Right.
On the field. But if you have better options, all of a sudden you're more willing to let that go. And so keep in mind the option of if you let Adam Jones go now because you said, forget it, I'm done with it, and then all of a sudden you think you're going to sign Drake Kirkpatrick and he has the right to do, decides to go elsewhere – and maybe someone throws a bunch of money at him. Maybe it's like Marvin Jones or Mo Sanu or whatever, which happened last year. And now you're left
right.
with Darquez Dennard and William Jackson in a bunch of hole no and in a big hole.
Right.
And so perhaps when looking at what the Bengals' timeline is on this, it would be Bengals sign Drake Kirkpatrick. 2 days later, Bengals release Adam Jones. That could be why they're waiting. And a lot of people are wondering, why don't they just do it now? What are they waiting for? You have to take that into play.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it also could be, you know, waiting to see what the NFL says as well.
Yeah. Paul, honestly, what's funny to me about this, yeah, I'm stammering here because this whole thing is just strange from the way this has been played out. For Hamilton County prosecutor and what he said, and we've all covered that. But I guess the biggest takeaway is the Bengals came out with that apology on January 23rd, which is a break from what they normally do when it comes to these situations. And I they're not sure. And I think a lot of that uncertainty comes from all of the things you just said. Some free agency with their other starting cornerback. How do they feel about the rest of the team? Which goes back to what I've been kind of pressing, which is this could be more of a football issue for them as opposed to a PR issue. But then there's also this weird, well, if Adam Jones, when it's all said and done, if he walks away with a ticket and counseling, was it fair to him to end his career potentially over that, right? Do they want that on their heads? Because look, I think the Bengals think about that stuff, you know, because they care about these guys as guys, clearly. So I think the league stuff is sort of out of their hands. If they suspend a player, you know, that is what it is. The NFLPA could deal with that. So it's interesting, Paul. It is. It's I think they're wrestling with a lot of this stuff, and I think you're right. I think we'll see some more clarity, with Drake Kirkpatrick, and maybe, you know what I mean? Because if they sign him, they have the money. They could still have Adam Jones on the other side, so it'll be interesting.
Right. Yeah, they could. Hey, the Pro Bowl happened.
Did it?
I think. No one got hurt. That's all I know. I cared about one thing. Did anybody get hurt? Okay, no one got hurt. Good. I think they dropped balls from a drone at one point on Thursday.
Yeah.
They played a game where the defense apparently tried a little bit. And good for you. Andy Dalton threw a touchdown pass to Travis Kelce. Ratings were down again.
Yeah, you want Pro Bowl made me mad.
Pro Bowl. Let's just jump right in.
See, no, here's the thing. I got two this week.
You've got two.
But this here, oh, I'm serious. Like this really, because now we're in what I silly season, in my opinion, in our business, with like free agents to be, and what are they doing? Who are they? You know, and we saw a little bit of it with Marvin and the Chris Cooley thing, but at least Chris Cooley is a person and like a name, and he played, and he's on like a real radio station. So that's kind of why they're generated some stuff. But check that. Do you know, Paul? I'm gonna blow you away. I'm gonna blow all the BBP listeners away right now. Do you know what happened after the Pro Bowl game? Do you know what happened after the game on the field? Do you know? No, you don't.
No.
Andrew Whitworth, free agent to be. You know who he talked to on the field after the Pro Bowl game? He talked to Odell Beckham Jr.
What?
Can you believe it? And it's according to things and places, one of which is a legitimate NFL network. It just drives me crazy. Because Andrew Whitworth talked to Odell Beckham Jr., the Giants are interested in Andrew Whitworth.
Oh, I knew it. I knew it. They sent Beckham down there to perform a sales pitch on Andrew Whitworth after the game. Not, you know, that was it. That's what it was all about.
Yep.
It was all about those few seconds chatting about – I'm sure that's what they were talking about.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, of course.
They were probably exchanging contract offers right there.
I believe it. And look, and guess what? You know what else happened in Mobile, Paul? Marvin Lewis talked with Wallace Gilberry in Mobile.
Wow.
Even though Wallace lives like 20 minutes away and his cousin was playing in the game, and Wallace has the coaches over for dinner on a regular basis when they go down there, but they talked.
Oh, he's back.
Breaking news.
Breaking.
All right, sorry. Oh my God, we're starting that now, and it's only going to get worse. But
I know it's terrible.
I can't let it get me too mad, but it got me mad.
No, but you're mad, yeah. And you should be. You should be mad. I gotta move on from the Pro Bowl and things, saying things about things.
You brought it up.
Well, although I could probably do an hour of what made me mad when we do next week's BBP as I'm reacting to my week.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't get this many people from this many news organizations together and have it not make people mad.
Right.
I mean, it's just going to be – it's just absolutely insane. We will have the great – speaking of things that make people mad, the Roger Goodell press conference
on
Wednesday. I'm sure some people will be mad about that. So we'll have that coming up. I'm gonna try to hang with Mosenu after, unless Matt Langle catches a touchdown in the Super Bowl. Maybe Matt Langle for MVP. Unless that happens, I'll probably just hang with Mosenu after the game. At least in when he's available in the press area and see how he does it. But
it's hoodie, man.
What if Matt Langle is the breakout star? Dude. Like this stuff like that happens.
Yep.
He'll be the David Tyree.
Yeah.
Of the Super Bowl, it's gonna be the Langle show.
Yeah. If you want to, Look, it's a Super Bowl. I haven't looked at all the prop bets. We do a degenerate corner every now and again. Oh, Matt Langle, if he's active, he's got to be on the list for like first touchdown scored. I mean,
I believe he is. He's listed as other.
As other.
He would be other. I can tell you that much. I'm looking at some of them now. he's not really showing up in many places.
Which to me, run to the window.
Run to the window.
For entertainment purposes only, by the way.
Yeah, of course, of course. Austin Hooper is 25-1 for most receiving yards in the game. Matt Langel can't even beat out Austin Hooper.
Wow.
Over under reception for Langel would have to be like it had to. It probably even is zero because they don't. They're just going to bet for people to try to get a push.
One reception, 2 yards, touchdown.
Touchdown.
First quarter.
Yep. No, game winner.
Or that.
Holy. Belichick dials up the Langel play for the win.
But the thing is it's not that ridiculous.
No, crazy things happen. Crazy things happen in the Super Bowl. I'm telling you, it's just one game and it's immortality. That's what it is. It only takes one play. All right. So on that note, no one probably cares about this, but this is just the most interesting dynamic of the NFL. Matt Langel in camp, a forgettable back of the roster tight end from Eastern Kentucky. Really amazing story. He actually tore ACL in the same knee back-to-back years.
Yeah.
And came back and still eventually was able to even get on a roster, which was good for him. And you know, New England, mid-season, all of a sudden they're just like, we're pulling him off the Bengals practice squad. And they did. They did, and he caught a touchdown against the Jets. He's got 2 receptions on the year. He played in the playoff game against Houston. He had about 20 offensive snaps. He's mostly special teams right now, but just plucked from the middle of nowhere, the most forgettable guy in the NFL, to standing in the middle of opening night in Super Bowl week.
This is great.
Just crazy. That's so great. Here's my conversation with Matt Langel, who just cannot believe this stuff is happening to him.
I guess if I told you at the beginning of the season you'd be standing here on Super Bowl Sunday with the Patriots, what would you say to me then if I was telling you that then back in training camp with the Bengals?
You know, I mean, it's just tough to predict anything that's going to happen. I mean, especially in this profession, man. It's wild, and you know, I'm overwhelmingly grateful, and you know, it's been cool so far. But I don't know. I don't know if I can honestly say I believed you if you said this would happen. You know?
Yeah.
Just because it's such a special thing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm grateful that it's here and trying to make the most of it.
You hear weird stories about, like, people will probably tell you when you're coming out of EKU or whatever, like, that league's crazy, like, you just never know what's going to happen. But you probably have to experience what you have to believe, like, no, it really anything can happen at any point in time.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. And talking to other guys, you know, who have been in the NFL now for 10 years, and you hear their story when they first started out, you know, they're here one day, cut another, didn't think they're going to play.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they get a phone call and boom, 8 years of your life goes by. You know, it's just wild. And it's crazy. It's wild. And, you know, if it's something you love to do, then you just got to wake up every day and prepare to give your best effort. That's really all it is.
What was that time like? I mean, when you were on the practice squad, I mean, there had to have been a feeling of frustration kind of buried in the depth chart, hoping to get called up. But what was that time like leading up to when you got the call by New England?
Yeah, you know, I was never a guy who was going to be ungrateful for the situation I was in, you know, because, you know, for me, coming out of EKU and with the injuries and stuff, you know, I was just always going to be grateful for another opportunity to play. So being in Cincy on the practice squad, I wasn't ungrateful, but I was unsatisfied.
Right.
And it's just such a blessing that I was able to get this opportunity. And, you know, I think for every guy, you know, you take a step at a time, goal at a time, and, you know, to be able to check off, you know, playing a game, scoring a touchdown, check it off. It makes it just kind of slowly takes a little bit of pressure off and, you know, a little self-satisfaction.
Yeah.
You know, just it's worth it for sure.
What do you remember about when you found out that New England wanted you? I mean, did you get a call from personnel at the Bengals or did they call you in the office? How did that all go down?
It was my agent called me and just, you know, informed me of what was going on and who was talking to who. And
really then I just waited a day to see what would happen, because you know, it's nothing's official until it's official, you know. So yeah. It's you know, a little bit of waiting around and a little bit of, you know, just wondering what's going to happen and kind of preparing yourself, and yeah. You know, for either, you know, the call of a lifetime or, you know, a letdown, and you got to refocus and you know, refocus yourself. But yeah, it was crazy. And
so he just said, you know, they put a claim in on you, let's sit and yeah. See what happens.
Yeah, yeah, like you know, there's, you know, the Patriots might want to pick you up, and then, you know, we'll give it, you know, we've got to wait for some things, and it's kind of,
yeah.
You know, in the beginning stages. But then after about a day, you know, it was, hey, do you want to do this? And it was just like, you just start like, I was sweating, and it was yeah. Just overcome with joy and,
yeah, yeah.
You know, a fear of the unknown kind of thing, but
yeah.
Overwhelming joy that, you know, something that you've always wanted is happening. And yeah. I just told him, I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And boom, I was on a plane, and that night or the next night, I mean, it was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy.
Well, and then you know, someone wants you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, that's probably a big part of it for you. This is, you know, you put on tape whatever you can, but you never know until you get that validation, I guess. Was that a big part of it for you when you got there, of like feeling wanted, I guess, a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I never really felt necessarily unwanted in Cincinnati.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, and then when I got to New England, I always, like, when I got here, I'm my hardest critic, you know, so just that validation, it doesn't set in until I do my job properly, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Until, you know, it's, don't get me wrong, it's nice to have a team say, hey, we like what we see of you, come help us. Not that, you know, they needed any help, really, but, you know, they're great football team. But, you know, to have somebody say, you know, we want you to come play for us, it feels nice.
So the touchdown wasn't a bad moment, I'm sure.
I mean, that was pretty nice, man. That was all right, too.
I mean, that's one of those, you talk about checking a box off.
Yeah.
You talk about, take me through that whole day. I mean, was that as crazy? That was probably as crazy as when you got the call to go to England, I imagine, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty wild. And, you know, just, and it was on Christmas Eve, and my birthday's the 27th. And
oh, really?
Yeah. My brother was in town. That was the only game my brother was at so far this year.
Kidding.
Yeah, and just perfect timing, you know.
Yeah.
Absolute, you know, blessing to experience that and just, you know, hear the crowd. And definitely a special moment. And, you know, Lord willing, I'll be able to replicate it a few more times in my career.
Yeah, Sunday wouldn't be a bad one.
No, that's for sure, yeah.
So that's Matt Langle. We can wrap things up here. From Houston next week, we're both back home.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah,
finally we can settle down a little bit until it comes time to head up to the combine. That'll be the next stop on the calendar. Will be the combine in late February, and then it's free agency. So
we're getting ready for your mock draft.
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up, because you are almost, just because I'm so sick of this gag and you bringing this up, I think I'm just going to do one early just so everyone can shut up.
Hey, man, Rocky Boyman, our guy Rocky, asked me on, you know, the powerhouse in Cincinnati, when's the mock draft? I said, hey, man, I'm trying.
Talk to me.
I'm trying.
Yeah. All right. Here's what I'll do. You heard it here first. I'm going to do just a top 10, my first shot at the Bengals pick. This is pre-combine, pre-free agency. I don't normally do this, but with them having a top 10 pick and you really annoying me with this line of questioning over and over and over again, and it constantly making me mad, I'm going to do a top 10 mock draft with my first shot at who the Bengals pick. This will be the game changer, everybody. I mean, this is going to change the entire outlook of how you view this team after I do a 10-player mock draft in February.
Can you put...
I hope you all are happy what you've turned me into.
Can you put like... Would it be 1.0 or would it be like 0.5 because it's only a top 10? Or like zero.
It's not even going to count. Oh. Yeah, it's like 0.0.
Okay.
because it's such a shot in the dark before they even know who they're going to lose or get in free agency or see any of the players' medicals.
Right. Or you know, any of the stuff that matters. Right. Okay.
Miles Jack and Jalen Smith were top five picks last year.
Yeah.
And then their medicals came back and they were all jacked up and they were ended up in the second round. Okay.
Hey, who are the Jags?
Who knew Carson Wentz was at this point last year?
I actually want to know. I mean, I'm more interested in who you're going to have the Jags picking. That
it doesn't matter because that franchise is dead to me. And I don't even care. I don't care who their coach is. Anyway, that was a bad hire. I don't care who their coach is. I don't care who their executive is.
Tom Coughlin's going to descend from on high.
All I care about is who their quarterback is because he's a coach killer and a bet killer, and he's cost me a lot of money.
Oh, I love it.
That's all I got to say.
It's the power of social media. I give the BVP listeners and our Twitter followers a lot of credit for this.
It's just, this is what you've turned me into. You've turned me into a monster that I don't even recognize. All right. So that you all got that to look forward to. As far as music to get us out of here, I'm here in Houston. Maybe some good Houston music? H-Town?
Yeah, if such a thing exists. Houston's, I'm not really a country guy. I mean, I'm not trying to knock Scarface or any of the Ghetto Boys or that's kind of more my speed, but that might be a little too, heavy for Super Bowl week. Super Bowl week's to me kind of ridiculous,
Here's what we're gonna do. I think you know who is from Houston? Bay, the Queen Bee.
Ah, yeah.
So. You know what the off season is all about? You know, everything we talk about is really sort of about the same thing.
Yeah.
Everybody sort of wants to do the same thing. You know what they want to do? They want to upgrade. They want to upgrade you. Okay.
That's true.
Everyone's looking for that upgrade so they can end up looking like the Falcons did when they added Mohamed Sanu and added Alex Mack. And so we got to upgrade it.
I'm down with that.
That's Beyonce, a little ode to Houston, since I'm down here for right now. And I couldn't find anything about how – you know what? It should be Jewel, Who Will Save Your Soul, because I don't know right now. Because you've taken me to this place. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be positive. We're going to use Houston as our jumping off point. And it's going to be Beyonce, Upgrade You. That's where we're ending up tonight. I decided.
So. That works for me.
All right, well, let's get out of here. Thanks for joining. As always, make sure you pick up the Bengals app. Keep checking sustain.com for all my coverage from Super Bowl and everything else. Lots happening down here. So, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later. I hear you be the block, but I'm the life to keep the streets on. Know this true, the type that like to keep them on the leash, though. I'm known to walk alone, but I'm alone for a reason. Sending me a drink ain't appeasing, believe me. Come harder, this won't be easy. Don't doubt yourself, trust me, you need me. This ain't a shoulder with a chip or an ego. What you think they all mad at me for? You need a real woman in your life. Taking care, home and still fly. Blessed to find your equal. Still play my part and let you take the lead role. Believe me.